please welcome Eric Howard.
So I'll start off by just saying that I love lowriders. And before I loved lowriders, I loved people. And so that's how I got into lowriding. I grew up in southwest Detroit, and I grew up on a street near Verner and Springwells. The street's name was Carson, and growing up, there was a lot of gang and drug activity. And there was a gang that started at the end of our street, and you know, they had a stronghold on the street for, you know, a good 15 years at the point that I was, I guess, coming of age or whatever, you know, however you want to call it. But around 18 or 19 years old, me and a couple friends, we saw the lowriders, like, in music videos and, you know, in Lowrider magazine. We were always looking in Lowrider magazine growing up. And we came up with the idea that, well, basically we were like, okay, kids are doing a few things. They're following their passions, and they're using their talents and interests, and those are deciding what it is that they're going to do later in life. And so we said, what are some things that people that get involved in the gangs are talented and passionate about that can attract the same people but, you know, help kind of lead them in a different direction, especially the really young people. And so we were like, you know what, if we can start a lowriding club, if we can get more into lowriding, you know, we buy these magazines every month, we're always looking at them and dreaming about what kind of cars we're going to have when we're older. If we can organize a group of lowriders and get the young people's attention and get them into the club, it's going to attract the same people, you know, that were growing up on our street, except it'll kind of give them a different group of people to hang around with. And so we got into lowriding. And, you know, we started calling sometimes, like if people's names were in Lowrider magazine, you know, we would look up those shops, or, you know, back then it was in the, you know, you'd have to call information or something. But then, you know, we were able to do that on the internet and things like that, and just started getting in touch with people. And you know, we started learning about the shows that were coming. So we started going to Chicago to some of the big lowrider shows and just started meeting people and kind of getting a network. Well, through that network, we met people from Uso Car Club, which is out of L.A., but they have chapters all over the Midwest. And we started a Detroit chapter of Uso. All this time, I was also taking pictures. And so the work with the youth and what we were doing with the cars was being photographed. And the cars, it was working. It was giving the young people something to do. It was giving us an excuse to be around them. It attracted their attention. And really, you didn't. It's unfortunate, but you don't have to do much more than roll up, you know, up to somebody's house with a nice set of wheels for them to hang on your every word and, you know, want to do what it is that, you know, that you're doing. And so we were able to use it to mentor. So we started the mentoring groups, got into lowriding, and then I met some people that were real encouraging about the photographs. They said, you know, you're taking great photographs, you should be documenting more. So I was documenting more, and then I started to submit them to the magazine. And so that brings us to the current day. I freelance for Lowrider magazine. I cover the whole Midwest for them. So Chicago, Milwaukee, Lexington, Louisville, Lima, Ohio, Indianapolis, Detroit, and into Ontario, like up to like the Niagara region. So anytime there's shows or things like that going on, the magazine calls me, hooks me up with the promoter, sends me out. So a lot of the pictures that you'll see is documenting some of the processes that we were talking about, bringing us up to when we got our chapter here in Detroit, and then some of the travels around the Midwest. And then also where it intersects with youth culture. And I'm currently working on a book, on a documentary. I'm talking to a couple publishers. You know how that is. It's tentative. Nothing's fine. But I have good hopes for it, and I'm glad that you guys are here today, and I can share some of the pictures and stories with you that I've collected along the way. So does everybody have toilet paper? Okay. So what we're going to do, since this toilet paper doesn't have plies on it, we drew plies. And each ply is the blue dot that you'll see on the toilet paper. This is funny because you guys were loving your toilet paper, so this will make this part kind of interesting. Since you guys have so many, what we'll do is however many plies you have is how many facts, experiences, or opinions about lowriding that you can share. Since you guys have so many, we're going to take the amount of plies that you have, and we're going to divide it by 4. Because some of you have at least 40. There's no reason to try to do that. So however many plies you have, just count up the number. We'll divide it by 4. And for every 4, I want you to just share one fact, opinion, or experience about lowriding. Doesn't even have to be true. You can even make it up. You can say all lowriders are purple. Who's brave enough to start? You said you? Great. Okay, you like tires on the lowriders? Oh, how many plies do you have?
16.
Okay, so you're going to share four facts, right?
Repeat a couple of them.
Okay. Okay, so four facts, opinions, or experiences, you know, for you having to do with low riding. What do you... Okay, reminds you of being young. Okay. Provides good organizations to belong to.
Big back seats.
Big back seats. cuddle, okay. That's three. Oh, the tires, that's right. Okay, so thank you. Who else wants to go? Okay, go ahead. He can't contain himself. We'll let you go. Oh, yeah, I could tell. He was being so good when you were doing yours. Okay, just what's one thing you know or think or have an opinion or experience for you with low riding? Low riders are positive? Okay. How many plies do you have?
About 45.
Okay, let's do five.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Southwest Detroit.
Okay.
But before you. And
a little before me.
I remember the bass. Boom, boom, all the music.
Okay.
I remember the gangs.
Okay.
I also, but probably my most interesting experience was like years, probably in the 80s, I was in New Mexico. My ex-husband was doing a postdoc. And we went to Las Vegas, Mexico. And they were having a lowrider festival.
Oh, nice. And I bet there's cars that you still remember today that you saw that day. Did you get pictures? Happy accident. Oh, yeah, that's great. Did you get to take pictures?
No, we weren't expecting anything like that.
Okay. Well, that's good. It was memorable. Okay, who else? Okay. Okay.
And how people engineer, some are very nicely done, others are...
How they engineer or don't engineer
yes.
their systems, okay. I was waiting for that.
Riding in some of those cars, but plus I like cars in general, so I like the older models. It's nice to see, it's different. You know,
right.
I like the Fords, this Ford Clearlane 500 here, something like that all set up.
Yeah, it's different.
Yes.
Yeah, one of the things with low riding, people aren't afraid to do things that are different. So, I mean, lowriders themselves are pretty different, but even among lowriding circles, you know, the things that are traditional, people are always getting reamed by the traditionalists for doing all this weird stuff. Like, what are you doing? You know, when it's funny because people would say the same things to them, you know, about their car and other car circles. So, okay.
When they put on the bouncing exhibits.
Yeah.
This is really amazing how you can really, how much power is involved to actually move something that heavy.
Right. Yeah, hydraulics are very powerful, and we'll actually talk about where hydraulics came from. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the history of how they wound up in the trunks of cars, but they came from a very powerful source. That's where people first got them before they put them in their cars. So, all right, thank you.
Yeah, sure. I, like this gentleman here, I'm an engineer, but work on mainstream autos, and I don't know much about low riding. So
okay.
I tend to associate with films and like Los Angeles and
okay.
that type of thing, and cruises down the boulevard there. I'm also fascinated by the hydraulics and how that works and operates.
Okay.
I do like the fact that it's on the older classic cars. I think that's neat. But I'm just here to learn more about it.
Great. Okay, the detailed paint jobs, very elaborate, some of them, very colorful. Yeah, I don't think I've ever met anybody who is unhappy to watch a car bounce itself until it breaks. There's just something fascinating about that. Okay, so what do you guys have? Okay. A lot of low riders are GMs. Nice workmanship. So people taking pride in what it is that they're building. Okay. And I think this is the last one.
There was one in the movie Cars.
Yes, there was.
That's really cool.
He was always redefining himself. He came out.
Third grade, so you know, all the third grade boys that year were really excited about it. We have a Hudson, so they not only did.
So the judge was a Hudson Hornet. The Hudson Hornet, yeah, Doc Hudson.
So they were really excited about that, you know, that I knew about Doc Hudson.
On a side note, I would love to build a rat rod one day, and I want it to be a Hudson. So it's a different culture, but from the movie Cars, I love the movie Cars. Yeah. And yeah, and the lowrider in Cars is always, I think every scene he had a different color. Mm-hmm. You know, he's always repainting himself, and which is ironic because one of the things in lowriding, people. They'll get these cars, and you know, they'll have this great story about how they got it, and they'll work hard and make all these sacrifices to finish it. And as soon as it's done, it's like people are allergic to having a finished car. People want a project; they sell it. You know, so there's like a joke. You know, it's like, you know, when somebody's getting ready to get their car painted or get their last step, you know, somebody will like give them a for sale sign, you know, to put in the window. You know, so you know, like you know, as if they're gonna get rid of it. Okay, well, I think that we have a varying degrees of familiarity with low riding, and it's good. I want to congratulate you guys for not for not saying well, only drug dealers and gangbangers drive low riders. As you know, I mean, that is a stereotype, you know, for low riding. They're in a lot of rap videos, they're in a lot of movies, and you know, they'll give them to the bad guys, you know, a lot of times, or else they'll, you know, there'll be a gangster movie and they show people doing all of their gangster things from the back seat of a pristine 64 Impala, you know, which of course is illogical. You know, I mean, I don't know, for multiple reasons, but first what I want to do is I kind of want to just give you guys a quick overview a quick overview, and I'm just going to use a couple talking points from some of the images that we're using. So this will kind of introduce us to multiple aspects of low riding. After we go through this this folder of images, which I think there's probably about 25 of them, it'll give you a quick overview to low riding. I'll, you know, use them for some talking points, and then there's some specific shows in different regions that I want to go through. And through doing that, you'll get to meet some of the people, you know, virtually, and some of the experiences and what goes into a lowrider picnic or a show, and what's the difference between the shows and the cruises, and what it's like to be on the road and be together with people, and the organizing aspect and the diversity and all of that. So this is a Cadillac that was completely homemade. I mean, aside from the car itself, obviously, the person that has this car, he made some poor decisions when he was young, and he wound up going to jail. And so he was away for quite a few years. Not too many. He's probably gone about 6 years. During that time, he missed out on some really important time with his father and, you know, and other family members. When he got out, he had bought the Cadillac before he went in. When he got out, this lowrider, as a project, was actually used as a way to make up some of that lost time. His father built the car together after he got out. It gave them an excuse to spend a lot of time together. They did all the paint themselves. They installed all the hydraulics themselves. They installed all the batteries themselves. And I mean, that's him in the trunk. You can barely see him, but he's back there adjusting something. So he brings the car out to a lot of barbecues and, you know, picnics and things like that. He's now mentoring young people. I can't say that he turned his life around because it was never really a mess. He just made some bad decisions. However, he's eager and excited and jumps at every opportunity to get young people in the car, drive around, you know, let them, you know, three wheel, you know, take them on cruise nights, you know, and things like that. Great guy. And so it's just kind of an example of of a lowrider car that people were building. You were saying some of the craftsmanship that people put into it. A lot of times when people get a lowrider project and start it, they know nothing about lowriding. They know nothing about working on cars. All they know about is lowriding, and through working on their own car, they learn skills, or at least pieces of skills. So people in lowriding make fun of other people who just buy the car and drop it off at a shop and just stop by and make payments. It's kind of like a hierarchy in the lowrider culture for how much you actually did yourself, or at least were around for. If, you know, not everybody's a tradesman, but, you know, around for and be there and help and assist. And, you know, if you can't paint, then you should be sanding, you know, on your car. If you can't sand, then you should be there with a broom cleaning up after the people who are sanding your car. So it's just kind of like one of the unspokens in the lowrider culture is the do-it-yourself mentality. So we talked about lowriding's appeal to young people, and before young people get on four wheels, they get on two. And so the bikes are kind of like a transition for the young people from going from being a really little person to somebody who can actually do something. So the kids get the bikes. They swap parts out. So you'll see, like, some of the bikes, they have, you know, like straight bars, but then other of them, you know, all the bars are twisted. You know, so when you buy the bike, most of the parts are straight. And then, you know, the more twisted parts that the young people have on the bike is usually the more that they've done to their lowrider project. And so you can kind of see, you know, the bikes are kind of like rolling trophies, you know, of what it is that the young person has done to their bike and things like that. Now, there's this prime age for kids that like lowrider bikes, and it's like, I would say from 11 to 13, and only about 2 years. After that, you can't get them on their bikes because they've already sat in the car, and now they want nothing to do with the bikes, and they just want to sit in the cars. You know, and so once the kids start cruising, their bikes kind of get put away, and it's kind of a weird thing because, you know, in bike culture, just in general, somebody will get a bike and they'll keep it. They'll keep fixing it and working on it and, you know, do different things or buy another bike or swap it out. And with lowriding, I would say a lot of the young people use it as like a foot in the door for the lowriding culture. So this picture was taken on a bike cruise in 2006. We were doing bicycle cruise nights down Verner. So we would start at Patton Park and go to Clark. Those are three of our mentees from our youth group. This is from a different bicycle cruise night. That's along 75 on the service drive near Livernois. And he's looking at you all. Now, this is the adult part of the lowriding culture. So this is actually at a hop. So this is a picnic. It's at the Rooster Tail. And this is one of the cars that pulled up and came, you know, to hop the car in competition against other cars. This was actually one of the people that was going to come out tonight. And he is hilarious, and I regret that you guys didn't get to meet him. But maybe if we bring some cars later in the summer, he'll probably be able to come out and do that with you guys. His car is another example of a car where he is not a mechanic, but has been very involved in every aspect of his project. He stays at the shop with them probably longer than they want him to, and stays involved with what's going on. So now this car is at the parking lot of the hotel before a Lowrider magazine tour stop. So you'll see there's a couple. You'll see a car. There's a lot more, but you'll see one car on a trailer behind it. And so there's different cars, and now you've seen a couple of the different cars. The one that the person was sitting in the last picture is a car that cruises. He hops it, he cruises it. It has candy paint, it has chrome on the bottom, it has the hydraulics, and it's on the street. So those are the cars that kind of get the most respect in the lowrider culture. And then you have the cars that they might not get the same amount of respect, but man, they have thousands of dollars at every part of the car. And so when they go out of town and they're going to shows, they're not driving their cars to the shows. They're putting them on the trailers. And I think in other car cultures they use the same terms, but have you guys ever heard of a trailer queen? Yeah. So, you know, you guys understand the difference between, you know, a car that somebody drove to the show as opposed to a car that somebody trailered. But, you know, it's just different. You know, people are into low riding for different things. They like to build you know, some people want to build something they can drive every day. Some people want to build something that they can show a lot of people what it is that they were able to do. So it's not so much about the cruising, it's about the exhibition. This is a, I want to say, 68 Cadillac convertible. I don't believe it's a 69. I'm pretty sure it's a 68. he drove this car to the show in Indianapolis from Lima, Ohio. I've done several road trips with him, and I've been in the back taking pictures. You'll see a couple of pictures I've taken from the back seat of the car. We've driven from Lima to Chicago to Milwaukee and then back to Lima. This car would be considered one of the cars that should be on the trailers, but he's very active, you know, with the car, and he works on it himself, and this is him right here. And he actually works at a shop. It's not his shop, but he paints cars. Gorgeous car. And this is at a picnic. It's a little less formal than a show. A lot of the picnics, there'll be people in different cities, and they organize an event, and they'll put out things online. They'll put out things by phone and by mail to get people from all the different cities in the region, and they want to get as many out-of-town people to come to their show as they can. In the Midwest, this is how the lowriding culture survives. Lowrider Magazine, as with a lot of other print publications, their page count keeps getting cut, you know, each month. They're bought by a big company who then had a big company that bought that company, who then had a bigger company that bought that company. And so they went from being an independent magazine to going to Primedia to now being part of Source Interlink. And, you know, so they have lots of bosses, and the page count keeps getting cut. Well, along with the page count getting cut, you know, so circulation is down. Along with circulation being down, the number of tour stops that they do is down from what used to be close to 20. It was between 15 and 20, to now there's 4 per year. And they don't get, well, I can't say that they don't get east of Colorado, because there's one show in Tampa or Orlando in that area. So they have one show in Florida, the other three, one's in Denver, and then there's a couple in California. They don't even have a show in L.A. anymore. They do San Bernardino and I think San Diego. So anyway, with the show circuit being shrunk, it's really affected the Midwest. And so, like, you know, I told you that I grew up looking at Lowrider Magazine, and then we went to some of the tours. Well, once we went to those tour stops, it was like instant inspiration. It's like, man, we have to do this, you know, and that's where we met people, and then those people said, yeah, you can do this, you know, help us set goals, help us to look for the kind of cars that we want to build. You know, it's a lot of the networking and inspiration takes place at the tours. Those aren't here anymore, and so now lowriding in the Midwest, which is why this is what I'm focusing on for my book that I'm doing, is closer now to what lowriding in California was like in the 60s and 70s. It's more informal. It's less about building the cars for the shows, you know, to show them where people then pay to come in and see them. And it's a lot more about picnics. It's about competition. It's about traveling. It's about networking, relationships, you know, sharing. So it's a very tight-knit lowriding culture in the Midwest. For example, if I seen a picture of a lowrider from Milwaukee that I had never seen before, I would be like, turn to the person next to me and be like, whose is that? I mean, it's that, you know, tight-knit, that if there was a car in Milwaukee that I'd never seen before, it would be like, whose car is that? And I would expect an answer from somebody that I know, you know, because it's just not like, you know, like it used to be. It's smaller. It's more intimate. So this is a picture from a picnic, and I thought that the word together was a really good descriptor for what was going on at the picnic. So this picnic was in Chicago. Majestics and Southside Cruisers both have picnics in Chicago that go every summer that people really look forward to all getting together for. This is another picture at the same picnic. There's different kinds of lowriders. Some of you pointed out that a lot of them are GMs. There are a lot of GMs, but even within the GMs, there are, I would say, subcultures of lowriders, and there are people who build what are called bombs or Chevys from the 30s and 40s and the early 50s, and they're the older Chevys or Fords, and It's usually older people, but it's a different culture. A lot of them aren't even putting hydraulics on them, but they're still considered part of the lowrider culture. They're actually heating the coils like people used to. So this picture is a good segue to give you guys a little bit of history about lowriding. How many people know where lowriding came from, like geographically? All right, we'll start at the beginning. in California in the 40s, have people heard of like the Zoot Suit Riots and things like that? Okay, in those same Hispanic communities in Los Angeles in the 40s and then into the 50s, cruising, you know, became a pastime that was popular. The car was actually, you know, of course, on the rise, and everybody, you know, every family wanted to have a car, and there were auto factories, you know, moving out to California, and people were getting jobs, and so, like, it was similar. You know, L.A. is a sprawling city, you know, similar to Detroit. Once the freeways, you know, came, then they were able to really, you know, develop. It's very spread out, so the car is central to the L.A. culture, kind of like it is here in Detroit, although it's a little bit different. So people were getting the cars, and then they were looking for ways to customize the cars. So even though they were able to afford a car, they didn't have one car that they drove and one car in the garage. It was the same car. And they wanted to do things that helped the car stick out from other cars. So one of the things that they were doing, a quick way to change the look of your car, is to lower it. And there's a really easy way to lower the car. And that is, you take the steel springs that are on the car, and what happens to metal when you heat it? So they would heat their coils, which would then lower the stance of the car, and then they would go cruising. And cruising was getting, from the law enforcement perspective, they would call it out of control. From a cruiser's perspective, they would say it was just getting great, you know, but the police needed to do something, you know, about it. They couldn't just give people tickets merely for driving their cars. So there was popular boulevards like Whittier in Los Angeles, or what's the intersection? Story and King in Northern California. I believe that's in San Jose, Story and King. And then a couple places in Texas. It was getting really popular, and there was a lot of lowered cars. And so what the police were doing is they were giving out tickets, which, you know, ultimately would amount to equipment violations for the cars being too low. Like, you can't cruise this car, it's too low, you know. So that's what the tickets were starting to be for. And so somebody came up with the great idea to take hydraulic pumps from World War II airplanes and create a system that goes in the trunk of the car that when you hit a switch, the hydraulic fluid, you know, leaves and goes into cylinders that then raise the springs. So they were able to cruise at a legal height, and then when they get to where it is that they're going, they were able to lower the car and, you know, put it at whatever height that they want. And at first the story goes that the police were really confused, you know, that they would go, they would, you know, pull the person over and the car was at the right height, and, you know, they would measure it and be like, what is going on? Like, this is, you know, really strange, you know. And so that went on for a while, and then, you know, of course, then the laws caught up with the technology. But that's, you know, early on, that's how lowriding was, you know, was born, and it was in cars just like these that it was happening. Surprisingly, the first car that had hydraulics was a Corvette. I believe it was an early 50s Corvette. Was the first car that had the hydraulic system installed in it for low riding purposes. You know, maybe there was prototypes made where car companies were doing, you know, something, you know, with cars. But, you know, for low rider purposes, the first car that had it was a Corvette. So when people are building cars like this, they're in kind of a different compartment of the low rider culture. You're getting parts at different places. You know, you need to meet people differently. Like if you're building a 1985 Buick Regal, the way that you're going to be building your car is going to be a lot different than somebody who's trying to restore a 59, you know, Impala, or somebody who's building a, you know, 40 Chevy, you know, or something like that. And so the networks are different. People meet different people, and the people who drive old cars, a really popular car club for people who are driving the old cars is called Los Viejitos, which means, like, little old people, you know. But the word in Spanish is kind of obscure, so it could be talking about the car or the person driving it. This is the Chicago chapter of Viejitos. And a lot of the clubs that started in California have you know, expanded, and you know, they have chapters in the Midwest and in other places. This is just a picture of somebody working on their car in their garage. It's obviously it's a 64 Impala. They're doing some last-minute touches before the show the next day. This is at a hop. So we've talked about the older lowriders, and then these are the hoppers. So the competition, people are building these. A lot of them will be really ugly. You know, they won't be like that fun to look at. You know, they have some crazy things going on. You know, a lot of them will have ads on them. You can see on the back of the truck it says Show and Go, and that's the shop that I was telling you about that my buddy works at. He was the one that was going to be bringing the cars today. And so this is at a hop. This is the ruler. So this particular style, what they're going to do is this car hops, and if it has one, two, or three pumps, it's single pump or, you know, or double pump, depending on how many pumps are going to the front cylinders. That's how the competitions are set up. And then they'll measure it, and so then they'll give out awards for single pump and double pump. Another way that they do it is they go head-to-head. So you just have two cars pull up with each other, and whoever hops the highest is the one that wins. And you'll actually see a picture of what can happen from a picnic that I went to 2 weeks ago, if it's not done right. So this is a car that Jimmy built, the person I was telling you about that has the shop. This car is called the Next Episode, and they actually the car was won in a raffle from Death Row Records, where Dr. Dre and Snoop and all of them were at in the early 90s. And this car was property of the you know, of the record label. Well, the person that won it sold the car pretty cheap. Show and Go shop bought it off of the person that won it from the raffle, and then they built it, and they called it the Next Episode, which is a song, you know, from that label. So very popular car, crazy paint job. It's candy red and yellow and orange, and it has stripes and patterns and chrome everywhere and crushed velvet interior. It's a lot of fun to look at, and we'll see more pictures of it in a little bit. This is another picture of that Cadillac that I showed you earlier. This is on a road trip, and we had to stop at a gas station for gas. That's what you stop at gas stations for. This is a macro shot of some of the parts inside of the trunk for the hydraulic system. It tells you, you know, there's a pressure gauge on it and lots of fittings, and some of it that I understand, some of it that I don't. My system and my trunk is a lot less complicated than this one. But this car, it goes to shows and it goes to picnics. It drives or it gets trailered. It wins a lot of awards. As you can see, it's cramped for space, and so the speakers are right on top of the hydraulic system, which is then right on top of the batteries. You know, this is actually in a Cadillac Fleetwood. You know, but some of the cars have roomier trunks, and they build them to be more spacious. These are all hard lines. They're not necessary, but it helps for the design, you know, in the back of the car and, you know, just how it looks. And then this is the motor. And then there's usually two of these, but this is one connected to two motors. So all the hydraulic fluid comes from this one source. It's all in this well. And then it goes through all of the lines, and then it goes through a cylinder that is next to a wheel. And then, so when you hit the switch, it releases all of the fluid, comes through the lines, goes into the cylinder, and then the cylinder expands, which then raises the car. And then when you hit the switch down, it goes through the dumps. You know, so it comes back, and you can't really see any of the dumps in this picture, but basically everything comes back through the lines and back into the reservoir. And so, as you can see, there's a lot of parts, a lot of moving parts, a lot of things that can break, a lot of things that can go wrong, especially when you start making it really nice like this one. This is one of their hoppers. As you can see, there's no windows, and there's some dents in places that you normally don't see dents on cars. It's because they don't stop hopping this one until it flips. This one actually, all four wheels will be off the ground at once. It's called a dancer. The box, the way that they have the controls on it, it goes front, back, it goes side to side, and then they have control over all four corners. And then they have another switch for what's called a pancake, and that's all cylinders at once. And then seesaw. which when you hit one switch, it raises the front and lowers the back. And then the other switch raises the back and lowers the front. So, I mean, you can just imagine what this truck can do. But, you know, when they pancake and they drop all four and then they raise it up, like, it hops off the ground completely. Usually about like this high, probably like 2 feet. So it's a lot of fun to watch. This is a 59 Impala convertible that they're currently working on at Show and Go Customs. This car is supposed to be out next year before the Super Show. The Super Show is in Vegas, and that's the last tour stop, and it's kind of like the championship. So it's where all the cars nationally come and compete. If you guys have questions, feel free to stop me and ask me different things about the car. Like I said, I'm not a mechanic. I'm more of a photographer and, you know, a lowrider myself. But anything that I can answer, I will. And if you have questions that I can't answer, I'll find the answers to them. That's a Hudson. This car is not a lowrider, but I took a picture of it because I had my eyes on it and I was thinking about it around the time that we bought our Monte Carlo. I'd never seen a Hudson lowrider before, and so I was considering, and I found it at this shop, and I liked this picture because at the time that I took it, I thought that there was nothing in the photograph that dates it, and then I saw these grills up here later, and so it kind of bummed me out, but still a fun picture besides. This is, his name's Checo, and he owns a store in Southwest Detroit. It's on Verner. It's across the street from La Sed, La Piedad. And these are his four sons, and he's very active in the lowriding scene. If you go to a show that's having a hop, it's almost guaranteed that he'll be there, and he's hopping the Regal. That's the car that they're in right now. He bought this car from L.A., from somebody who built it in Compton, and then they've made changes to it and stuff since. So very active in the lowriding scene and in the competition aspects. But he also cruises the car. If he goes out of town, you know, it goes on a trailer, but, you know, he drives it up and down Verner and it hops. Now, this is a photograph from a photo shoot I did for Lowrider. This was in Louisville. So, you know, we just went down by the bridge. I forget what it's called, but everybody knows the name of it except me, the bridge. But So this was a shoot that we did. This person had been building this car for probably like the last 8 years, and just done small things to it, 7 or 8 years, and had always wanted to be featured in the magazine. And so I was honored enough to be able to give him his first shoot. You should have heard how excited he was. It was almost ridiculous, but I can understand because I felt the same way growing up reading the magazine and then doing pictures that, you know, were then printed in it. So I've never really had the desire to have my car in there, but I can understand, you know, why they would be so excited about it to them, and they kind of made it. But one of the things I've noticed is after I shoot somebody's car for a feature and it comes out in the magazine, almost always they get rid of it. It's like they already did everything that they wanted to do with it. And so a lot of times, anytime I'm shooting a car, I joke with one of my friends, you know, that he's always talking about getting into lowriding. I'm like, well, here's a car that's going to be for sale in, you know, in a couple months, so, you know, keep your eye on it. It is, and so you notice it's not a GM, and there are a lot of non-GM lowriders, and some of them that are even considered traditional. The Lincoln Town Car has become what's considered a traditional lowrider. It's a very popular car for people to, you know, to work on. There's a few others also. Let me try to think of one. Well, for people who work on cars, there's certain things that they're looking for in the suspensions on the cars and ways that make them easier to modify or some cars are really hard, but because they're a GM and because they're nice, they still do the modifications. Now, like G-body GMs, Regals, Monte Carlos, Grand Prix and Cutlasses, very popular because the work that has to be done to turn them into a car that can hop is a lot less involved than what you have to do to, say, you know, a Cadillac Fleetwood. So you'll see less Cadillac Fleetwood hoppers, and you'll see more G-bodies being hopped, the GM G-bodies. I don't know exactly everything that they look for, but, for example, the 64 Impala is on an X-frame. Which really lends itself to a lot of the things that they're wanting to do with the cars. Like if you've ever seen a lowrider do three-wheel, like where one wheel will raise up off the ground, the X-frame on the 64 lends itself in the shop to be more easily modified to be able to do that without harming your car, as opposed to like a 94 Caprice, which people are hooking up as lowriders, but you don't see them on three wheels as often. So it's just, it depends on what people want to do with the car. And what they're looking for, and then they talk to somebody who actually does that work and say, if that's what you want to do, that's not the car that you want. You know, so each of them kind of, like if you made a cartoon with all lowriders, like they would all have different personalities, and it would have to do with stuff, you know, with the way that they were engineered and what it is that they, you know, that they want to do. So, like when you're looking at a parking lot full of cars, they kind of become like characters. This was a photo shoot that I had done, and this was his keychain. It was in a 64 Impala. And the reason I took this picture is because lowriders are very detail-oriented. It's actually almost all about the details. You know, the car needs to look good as a whole, but when you start getting down on the ground and getting close to it and things like that, people that are building the cars or the people that own the cars, they're putting a lot of little surprises, you know, into the cars for people. So they pay attention to a lot of the small things. Sometimes even at the expense of some of the big things that are supposed to be done, you know, but they'll have like really nice pinstriping or something really subtle, or, you know, or something in the trunk on the setup that, you know, that you would be like, oh, that's really great, but how come you don't have a front bumper? You know, and it's like, oh, well, you know, I haven't found the bumper yet, but, you know, isn't that really cool what I did in the trunk? Like, yeah, you know, that's cool. So, this is at a hop. This is a 68 Impala, and then this is a Fleetwood. So it's an old car hopping against a new car, and you should see it at the hops, the things that people argue over, because unless you're hopping the exact same car that is has the same amount of pumps, that has the same amount of weight, you know, so it has the same amount of batteries, and is even the same color, if you're not doing that, then people will argue, well, you won because something's different on your car than on mine. Which always leads me to wonder, why did you even get in the pit with somebody who has a different car if that's all you're going to argue about after? So some cars kind of have these unspoken handicaps. So, like, if you get into the pit with a car that has chrome undercarriage and has a nice paint job and doesn't have any scratches on it, and you lose against a car that doesn't look good, it's like you still won. You know, so I don't even know why the other cars even get into the pit with them, because if they win, they're like, yeah, I beat you, and this is what my car looks like. If they lose, well, yeah, I didn't beat you because look at your car and look at mine. You know, so it's like very subjective. I mean, you'd think it would be just about the inches, but it's really not. And I wish that I had an excerpt from the forums online to just show you how people talk about their cars after a hop. It's pretty ridiculous and entertaining all at the same time. So these are two people that don't argue very much. They're pretty familiar with each other. You know, they hang out with the same car club and stuff like that. But this car also hopped a Regal, and the Regal beat the car, and so the conversation that ensued was just like, but yeah, but that's a G-body. And it's like, okay, well, then why did you hop me? You know, and it's like, well, because you thought you could beat him, and you didn't, you know, so now it's about the paint and the chrome and, you know, all the other stuff. So they try to match the cars that are in the same class, but it seems like they create a new class every time there's two cars in the middle. This is actually in Hamilton, Ohio. Which is kind of an obscure location. It's about 20 or 30 miles north of Cincinnati. There's a really big lowrider club there called Westside Lowriders. They build all their own stuff. There's a guy there named Chad. His nickname's Mr. Hardlines because all of the metalworking in the trunk that you've seen, like that the tubes that the oil is going through, he's very precise with everything that he does. Like in his hard lines, like they don't have leaks and they're very ornate and there's a lot of bends in them, and you know, the chrome on them is perfect, and you know, where he bends them, they're not getting too thin to where, you know, it creates an issue for the system. So he's built a really good reputation, and from a little town in Hamilton, Ohio, he's been being featured in Lowrider magazine. There's one section that always features somebody's trunk, it's like there's two sections, and one's like from the hood, like that's what the section's called, and it's about engines. And then there's another one that's called pumps and dumps, and that's always featuring somebody's trunk. And I think it was last year, 2008, out of 12 issues, four of the cars that were in the pumps and dump section were setups that he did. So for that being somebody from Hamilton, Ohio, that's, you know, pretty impressive. So now he has people from California that are bringing them their cars or flying him out to work out of a shop to, you know, do their hard lines and things like that. So this club that puts on this picnic every year, and it's in July, if you guys ever want to go, is the club that the guy Chad belongs to. They have another guy that does hydraulics, and they manufacture them, and, you know, they come from Kentucky, you know, but it's really close to the border right there. And it's called Pitbull Hydraulics. And there's another hydraulic company called CCE, which is just Cool Cars Equipped, and that's a really popular hydraulic company that's supplying, you know, cars in LA, and that's out of Kentucky too. So it's kind of strange. Like there's some hotbeds in Ohio and Kentucky, you know, for low riding. This picture is also from the same picnic, and these people are all from Chicago, and they're from Southside Cruisers, and this is a Fleetwood. Okay, this is their Fleetwood that they hop, but then they have a Bel Air station wagon that they hop to that we'll see in a minute. This is in Detroit, and this is at a show, and the show was at Campus Martius. That's a 62 Impala. It has airbags, so that's another difference that people have. Like, they'll argue about what's traditional and what's not. And again, it's funny because, you know, when people were putting the airplane parts in their trunk, you know, some people are still getting those made, you know, for their car, and they're getting them refurbished and cleaned up, and those trunks are very expensive. But you can set up your trunk in a lowrider, you know, for around $2,000, you know, with your batteries and then all of the metal that you need to reinforce the battery so that the weight's not sitting on, you know, that part of your trunk, which then bends your, you know, quarter panels and makes all kinds of messes. And then you have airbags. So you have the really old way to do it, then you have, like, the newer way to do it, and then you have, like, the brand new way to do it. And a lot of people argue that, well, if you have airbags, then you're not a lowrider. Which, of course, is ridiculous because you're still hitting a switch and your car is low. So, you know, by the very definition of the word, you're riding low and you're in a traditional car and there's spokes. You know, people would say, why is that not a lowrider? That doesn't make sense. And they say, well, because you're not doing it like it's supposed to be done. And then the old people step in and they say, you're not doing it like you're supposed to because you don't have any airplane parts on your system. You know, how is that traditional? You know, so it just never ends. People just kind of chase their tail with it. And, it, again, it's fun to listen to. this was a photo shoot I did in Chicago, and this was a 48 Chevy Fleetline, beautiful car. And then this is the lowrider guy. So they recently updated their logo, so it looks a little bit different, which makes this picture, you know, a little cooler to me because now that's not the logo anymore. And this is the same 62 Impala, and this was for a shoot for the magazine also. It was one part of, you know, the shoot. I don't know why his plate says 63, because that is a 62. Oh, expiration. Never mind. So now these are plaques. So people who are part of car clubs, they have plaques made. So they have the steel. There's companies that'll, I forget what's the process of turning the steel into that. It's not, yeah. Some of them are laser cut, and some of them, they do something else. I forget the name of it. Maybe. I might not even know it if I hear it. Yeah, there's the water jet, they make rims that way, right? Sometimes? Is that? Okay. There's really interesting processes. One of the things that I want to do before I'm done shooting is actually go to a shop and get some pictures of them making some plaques. So when you're in a club, one of the things you have to do is buy a plaque. And a plaque is usually always considered a property of the club, even though, like, you have it in your car. So, like, if you leave a club, they'll do what's called pulling your plaque. If your car is not up to standards for that particular club, or if you leave the club, then they'll try to pull your plaque, which means it doesn't belong to you or it doesn't, that your car can't have it in there. So it's kind of like jackets, you know, like with other kinds of clubs or, you know, things like that, you know. So the plaque is a very, you know, important part of the lowriding culture. People, you know, they'll wear their logos on their shirts, you know, and they wear them in their cars as a steel plaque. This is another plaque. This is for Majestics, which is a famous lowriding club. Have you guys ever heard of the film Sunday Driver? It came with Grand Theft Auto, the video game. It was like a documentary. Well, Majestics was the club that they did the documentary about. This is what happens inside of a trunk after a hop. Lots of smoke. if you're lucky, it's just lots of smoke, and then there's a quick disconnect. So when the batteries are hooking up to the motors and the pumps, and there's a quick disconnect that's usually up underneath the driver's seat so they can, you know, disconnect it. But if your car is a hopper, sometimes a lot of lowriders, you'll see them with a cord hanging out of the trunk in the back. You know, it'll be bigger in the middle, and then it'll be two cords. And what you do is you turn it and you pull it apart, and it cuts all the power to the batteries and to the motors. So whenever there's smoke, like, you have to disconnect it. You know, that, you know, something can happen. Often there's fires, of course, after smoke. You know, not too much longer after that, you know, something's burning. So you can just imagine that sometimes people can't get to their quick disconnect, or they don't notice it, and, you know, there's flames before they're able to, you know, to do that. So this is the switch when they're hopping. It's just a single switch, because all it is up and down for the front two cylinders. And then, you know, you're supposed to time it, and it's pretty, you know, precision where, you know, you have to hit it at the right time. You know, when the car drops, you know, then, like, you want to dump everything and raise it. You know, you don't want to dump it when it's in the air, because then when it hits, it just, you know, kind of falls down. If it hits when it's extended and then you drop it and you're able to get, you know, like a good lick off of it, then that's what makes the car go higher. I don't know what theories like they're using in there, what that would be, maybe inertia or something, but, you know, however, we have a couple engineers. What would you call that? I guess just trying to get your car higher, I guess. Well, and the tires are very important, too. People that are hopping their cars will have different size tires on them than people who are, you know, who are cruising. That's one of the things that they argue about. You know, if somebody comes in and they're like, yeah, but you have balloon tires, you know, and, you know, as opposed to a lower profile, which doesn't give you as much bounce. And that's back to the beginning. So that was an overview, and that's why we took so long there. We're gonna go over some of these kind of fast, but these are just a couple extras. These are just some more bikes, and it's the front of that Cadillac that I like photographing. This is on a road trip between Lima and Chicago. We just, you know, took highways and freeways, you know, to get where it was that we were going, which gives that guy a lot of respect for his car when he pulls up somewhere and it's not on the back of a truck. You know, they're like, you drove that all the way here? And you're like, yeah, you know. This is in the back of a 69 Impala. It's from Chicago, another ornate setup. And then, like, these dumps, these are the old ones. These are from, like, the aircraft setups. They're obviously, like, shaped and molded and chromed a little bit differently, but that's where they're from. That's the 64 in a garage. Now, this is, like, a newer car. He has hydraulics on it, though. And I think it's an Acura Integra. You know, I just thought it was a nice shot being at the gas station and being next to all the old cars, you know, something that's a little bit newer. Some non-traditional things like, you know, the doors that, you know, open up as opposed to out. And so this wouldn't be considered a traditional, you know, but it has a lot of, you know, a lot of workmanship on it, and a lot of details. These are the two of the Impalas that we were hoping to have here tonight. This is Jimmy and Tommy's car. And they're in the Majestics chapter that we have in Detroit. They started the Majestics chapter there, and then they have that shop, Show and Go Customs. This is a young person from a bike club in Chicago. This is Checo's car, the Regal I was telling you about, the guy that had the four kids inside the car. And then Majestics, a big honor is when you have a chapter of a car club, you know, here in the Midwest, like, you want people from the founding chapters to come out and support your club, and so they try to make their rounds. But you can imagine the more chapters that open, the harder it becomes for them. And for Majestics, the Compton chapter is the founding chapter for their club. So some people from LA and from the LA chapter and Compton chapter and also Arizona came down for this show at the Rooster Tail on the river, and this was the hop. Just some detail shots of Cadillacs. This is on Verner during the Cinco de Mayo parade. This is on the freeway between Chicago and Milwaukee. We're going to a show. I was in the car with him, and he kept doing that. So when we got to a gas station, I switched cars. One, because it was uncomfortable and a little scary, and two, because I wanted to get a picture of it. So, you know, it wasn't long before we got on the road and he started doing it again. So I was just able to get a picture, and I didn't get back in with him. But he's a good friend of mine. That's Bert from Milwaukee, and he's in the same car club as we are. This guy's from Hamilton, Ohio, and this car is a pink Monte Carlo, a pink 79, and his wife Angie is the one that hops it. And this car, I mean, it has a reputation that goes all the way to L.A. People have brought cars from L.A. to hop them at the picnics that we have in the Midwest. And there's, like, this big whole, like, Midwest versus the West Coast. Like, they kind of look at us as, like, a stepchild because lowriding didn't start here, but, you know, we kind of take their cues. You know, so it's kind of like a father-son kind of thing, but it's real competitive. So this is one of our big hoppers from the Midwest that gets a lot of inches. This is that Lincoln that was, you know, near the docks, near the bridge. 64 Impala. That's Jimmy from Show and Go. And that's at a hop. That's him just talking junk to the other person that he's hopping because that's what they do. I swear they talk more than they hop, and that's part of the fun for them. But he was hopping Pinky. They're good friends, but, you know, they like to argue, and then they hop on top of the cars after they're done. And, a big thing in lowriding culture is documenting. There's cameras everywhere. People take pictures, and they put them on their MySpaces and on forums. And so the news for what happens at a hop that people are watching, like, online, like, you know, come to our picnic, we're going to have a big hop. Come to our picnic, we're going to have a big hop. People are taking pictures of them with their cell phones, and they're posting them to the forums as they're happening. So, like, people out west are watching to see who's going to win. I mean, they're not watching it like you watch a basketball game, but they're checking the forum. So the news spreads really quick, and that's how reputations are built. And, you know, and so then if you get a car that's getting a lot of inches, you know, and you have proof, and people always say Pixar didn't happen. Like, that's, like, a big thing that they say online, like, with the cars. If you get a car that's hitting inches that becomes intimidating, then that's how we get people to come out from the West Coast, because then they want to come out and they want to beat you, you know. So, I mean, that's just, like, part of how it works, you know, here in the Midwest. How are we doing on time, Aaron? Okay, so this is, like, the number of people that come out for the hops, you can see. This is a road trip. Now, this is our Detroit chapter of our car club, USO. We have a 72 Rivi, a 59 Impala. This is our Monte Carlo back here, mine and my wife. And then a 64, or a smaller chapter. I'll just zip through some of these. These are majestic people from Kansas and from Arizona and from L.A. and from Detroit. It's another hop. It's a Cutlass. It came from out west. They bought the car from somebody that built it out west. And this is what the cars look like when they're really up. And this is Show and Go's Monte Carlo that they built to make people come out here from out west. That's why they built it, and it worked. Now, these are from 2 weekends ago. I'm going to skip through these. I'll show you some of these. These are a cruising that we did at Ford in Wyoming at the drive-in. They want to start doing it every year. But I've been wanting to take pictures of these for a while because, like, this picture, there's really nothing in it that tells you what year it is. And I wanted to do that for a while. I mean, even the car in front of us is a 68. So, I mean, I guess you know it wasn't in 59, but besides that, I guess it could have been at any time. Everybody loves nachos and refreshments. And what'd you say? Yes. And then when you enjoy time in the big back seat in the drive-in, the next year you come and you have extra passengers. And so these are Checo's kids underneath the back of his car because it's raised all the way up in the back, and, like, the back will sit up about 3 feet off the ground. And so, like, he was under there telling the other kids, like, what parts are what and things like that. This kid is adorable. a Sonic and cruise there, and people bring their kids, so it's very family-oriented. It's a very diverse culture. It brings people from all different backgrounds together, you know, to cruise. Like, this was just one night at Sonic on Fort Street. This is at a haircut shop on Joy Road that we hang out at sometimes. The owner has a 63, so he's a friend of everybody's, and, you know, he lets us just bring the cars up there, and, you know, we just hang out at the barber shop. And that's our car right there. That's Adam. He's a young photographer, and so we've been doing some stuff together. I'm trying to get him to come out of town with me and, you know, start doing that whole thing. And, you know, eventually it'd be nice if he starts doing some coverage for the magazine, too. This is the Regal on three wheels at the corner store. What's that? One more after this? Yes, this has the quick disconnect. And he gets teased for having it because his car doesn't hop. And so we're like, why isn't your disconnect underneath your front seat? Like, you're never going to be behind your car. You don't even have a cord that comes out of your car. But we just, you know, tease him. Okay, this is the picnic in Kentucky like 2 weeks ago. So, you know, they just had a picnic and invited everybody out, and people came. This is the guy with the 68 Impala that I was showing you that was hopping, like, at the West Side Picnic, and that's the car behind you, or behind them, not behind you. Everybody turns around. He brought it. And so these people came in from Missouri. So there's people from St. Louis. There's people from Tulsa. People from Texas came in. A couple people from L.A. And then Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee. And then we don't know where he came from. He's not a low rider, but we think he was just local. Remember I was telling you about Pitbull Hydraulics? This is their logo, and these are their parts. They built this trunk. This is for a car in Chicago. That's a beautiful 60. He came from Texas with it. And now this guy, kind of like how I get to travel around and do the photography, there's people that travel around and do videos, and they bring a bag of their videos with them. And so he came out from L.A. to film this hop that we were having in the Midwest because people from out west came to beat some of the cars that we had that were getting, you know, big inches. So he documents it. And that's the station wagon that they build from Southside Cruisers. And that thing, you'd be surprised, but when he hops it, it hits back bumper. So it goes all the way until it hits the back bumper. And you're not allowed to get your car stuck. If your car gets stuck, then the hit that you did where it got stuck doesn't count. Like, the inches don't count. So you're not allowed to just rest it on the back and then be like, okay, we won. So there's, you know, there's some strategy to it, too. It's not just beat up your car. This was all of us cruising and took over a gas station in Louisville. And Cubs fans. Oh, these are a little dark for the screen, but just some profiles of people. This is all in Louisville, and so this is, you know, everybody from that were coming to the picnic the night before. We did a cruise through the town. So these are all lowriders back here, and of course people were really excited to see it because it's not, you know, common in Kentucky. These are some of the cars. Some more of them. He came from New York to take pictures and just love everybody. This is another station wagon that was built. This one's from Kansas City. Yeah, okay, Kansas City. I can't remember. But, I mean, just a lot, like, again, a lot of detail work, to get this done inside. I mean, I would probably rather have a speedometer, but, you know, it's just impressive to have that, you know, have the name of your club there. So a lot of work on the engines, you know. So people, like, a lot of times they'll think of lowriders and they're like, oh, it's just a junky car that hops. And, you know, that's not always the case. You know, there's a lot of pro street influence in lowrider culture now. A lot of just like a lot of the other, you know, car cultures, you know, kind of, you know, melded to come together because, you know, I mean, a lot of people, a lot of magazines are going away, and that's affecting, you know, people bringing new people in and things like that. And so a lot of the cultures are taking cues from each other and, you know, getting together at more shows together. And, you know, the rat rods and lowriders are doing more together, and, you know, they're all doing more with pro street people. And, you know, the pro street people are, you know, becoming more interested in some of the new stuff that's going on. So it just kind of helps expand the network, and people learn that they have more in common than in difference. These are some of the videos I was telling you about. this guy's name is Big Fish. Not sure why, but the guy that was with the camera, his name was Big Fish. This isn't Big Fish, but he came from Texas. 64, engine of a 64. Pitbull hydraulics, and you can see a lot of people have them in the trunk. This is a more ornate setup. This actually cools the fluid, all of these things. Something happens when the fluid gets too hot. I don't know if it has like a negative effect on the hard lines or if they don't get as good of a response when they're, you know, trying to hop or things like that. So, and then these dumps are from an airplane setup. Some detail shots. These are the valves back here and the lines. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I rarely see a 60 Impala, and there was three of them, and two of them were convertibles at this picnic in Kentucky. I probably hadn't seen one in 4 years, and all of a sudden there was three at one picnic, so it was interesting. And, you know, he's number one. this is before a hop. They were getting ready to hop each other and just getting the cars ready, you know, checking the air and the tires. These are the guys that came out from L.A. To support their club that was in Kentucky that was throwing the picnic. See the see where it says Mr. Hardline? That's the guy I was telling you about that's out of Ohio that's making everybody in the Midwest proud that, you know, this kind of work is coming from there. Yeah, now he does the whole setup, and he actually organizes people's trunks. So he's doing more than just the hard lines, but the hard lines is the part that he's doing that a lot of other people can't do as well. Or if they can, they have to charge a lot more than he can charge, you know, than he has to charge. I guess the more bends that you have and the more distance that the lines travel, the more problems that can possibly happen. But, like, his systems have a really good reputation for holding up. And then he does really good clean trunk design. So if you let him do your whole trunk, like you can see this bar, like this is all steel that has to shift the weight from the batteries and everything else that's going on in the trunk. But he does a really good job of just making it look nice and, you know, look like a part of the trunk. So just really clean setups and good craftsmanship. That car came up from Louisiana. It's probably the only lowrider in Louisiana, but he came out. This is our Lima chapter, and he's in our Kentucky chapter. And he's from Westside. He's the one that hops Pinky. And these are all like Westside lowrider cars, so they all drove down to support that picnic in Kentucky. People of all ages, all different car types. This is a Chicago club. Lots of stuff going on in the trunks. This car has 16 batteries and 4 pumps, so there's 2 pumps going to the front, 2 pumps going to the back, so it's a lot of power. And then when you have all that weight in the trunk, it helps your car hop too, you know, because all the weight's in the back. And then people also have secret compartments in their trunk where they just put full, like, ladder steel blocks, and they have to hide them because you're not allowed to do that because, you know, it's cheating, but everybody does it, and everybody says that they don't. Just a way to get more inches, you know, and cheat. St. Louis people, crowd shots. Kentucky people, they're from Texas. You know, so, I mean, if there's anything that, you know, that I want to be able to communicate about low riding, it's that that's not always what it looks like. There's a lot of craftsmanship in the cars, a lot of creativity. There's a very strong network that is behind every car that's built. Not everybody that drives lowriders that's interested in lowriders is doing, you know, illegal things, although there are some people who do, you know, just like with anything else. More important than anything is the network of people that exist that help these picnics to happen and that build these cars. And that's where the life and the heart of lowriding is. And that's why it's a really good time to be looking at or following lowriding in the Midwest. Because if it wasn't for those networks, there would be nothing. Because there's not, like, big company sponsorship right now in our region. There's not big shows in our region. And so everything that you're seeing is a product of relationships, which makes it really interesting to follow. And for me, really easy to shoot, you know, so it's almost like cheating as far as, you know, being a photographer. When my wife and I or any of the kids from our youth group, if we go to another city in the Midwest, I don't know when the last time I had to pay for a hotel room. Or you know, have free food, like, put in front of us, or, you know, like, oh, you're coming? Like, stay with us. You know, we're going for something completely different, you know, something for work. They don't want us to stay at the hotel. They want us to stay at their house. And it's not because, you know, because I take pictures or anything like that. It's just because we're plugged into that network of lowriders, and they really look out for each other, and it's a very, you know, tight-knit group. Families are very important. Diversity. People, you know, respect each other's differences, and unless you're talking about cars when they're hopping each other. And then, of course, every difference is a, you know, possible fighting point. And, I mean, there's just a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, like, high emotions, and there's a lot of ups and downs, and people ride them out together, you know, in the lowriding culture. And, you know, it's really fun to be a part of, and it's been pretty rewarding, and I look forward to, you know, sharing the book with people when I finally get that finished. So, any questions? A lot of them get started themselves, like, they just get interested in it, you know, then they'll have goals. And, like, for us, with the way that we do things, because we're using, you know, we got into lowriding in order to do mentoring, which then paid us back tenfold, you know, because of all the rich experiences that we've had since getting involved. For us, the young people, if they're interested, our role just becomes to help them start setting goals. A lot of them are goals that maybe they can't accomplish until they start doing some things for themselves, but that's where it's advantageous for them to hang out with us because we're doing a lot, you know. You know, Aaron invites us out here. They get to come out to Ann Arbor, or, you know, come in cars, or, you know, cruise on Verner and lowriders, or, you know, hit their first switch, or, you know, just stand at the parking lot with all the older people, and, you know, but with people that are looking out for their well-being. So for us, when we meet young people that are into lowriding that have gotten into it themselves, it makes them, like, that's what we want, because that's how we get them, because then we have lowriders, and then we can introduce them to a culture of mentoring, you know, that comes along with it. But for people that don't have those resources or access to people, you know, the risk that you run, I think, is overemphasizing materialism, which is not positive, especially if it's beyond somebody's means. So we really try to keep that in balance and in focus. What's nice about the bikes is you can, remember how I was saying the kids will be on them for a summer and then they'll put them away? It makes it really easy to get a used bike. We've kind of capitalized off of that, where members are kind of like, just like trading, you know, with each other, and like they're not like passing them down and giving them away for free, but, you know, they might work one summer, make $500, put all their money into their bike, and then they're done with it because they'd rather cruise, you know, with us. Well, next summer that bike only costs $200 for the next kid, and he can cut, you know, 10 lawns, you know, and then, you know, he can have that bike, or, you know, he raises half and his mom agrees to give him half. Again, the relationships really come into play, and the people that they get to meet and know really have a lot to do with what they have access to. Does that help? Okay. Well, for me, this year's a little bit different because, as Aaron knows, in about 6 weeks, we have our first new addition to our household. So this summer for me is really scaled back. I'm not going out of town as much. That's why I was able to go to that Kentucky show a few weeks ago. I'm going to Chicago next weekend, and that's probably pretty much it for me for the year as far as, what's that?
What about your chapter?
There are, nope. Yeah. Yeah, well, there's other lowriders in Lima. But, again, that's another small chapter. And they've been there for 12 years, but they only have four cars. But they're four really high-quality cars, and they hit, like, all the out-of-town stuff. And that's the key with lowriding is, like, if I go to Chicago and I take my car and I support somebody's picnic, they kind of owe me. So they need to be in Detroit, you know, within the next year. If they're not, then we're not going to go back. Unless, you know, we're not going to bend over backwards to go back. So that's kind of how you keep people going. It's like you trade participants, you know. So that Kentucky picnic, there's going to be a lot of favors that chapter's going to have to repay. If the chapter that threw that picnic in Kentucky 2 weeks ago that all those people were at from all over, if they don't start hitting out-of-town shows, then next year their show is going to be, like, it's not. You know, so people go there because they also want, you know, they want them to come to their cities too. So, I mean, it's kind of like a family that way. You're asking more specifically, like, about a certain show. There are shows that are coming up. In September, there will be a picnic at the Rooster Tail. And, well, it's going to be a barbecue, and then there's going to be a hop. That will be, like, one of the first weekends in September. It'll be around Labor Day. Labor Day. And then in July, like in the third week in July in Hamilton, Ohio, which is only about 4 hours away, three and a half hours away, something like that, the West Side Picnic. And those guys get around, so a lot of people return the favor, and it's a pretty popular picnic. And like to me, it's one of the best picnics. Then there's two picnics in Chicago that happen every year. One is at the end of July, and one is at the beginning of September. It's the Majestics and the Southside Cruisers. And those are all really good picnics to go to where if you've never been to a lowrider event, you'll meet people that'll be like, hey, how you doing? You know, like, they're popular events. You know, people want to answer questions and things like that. If any of you are interested in hitting any of those shows, like in the Midwest, I can get, you know what? I noticed when I was walking in that I have an empty card case. So I can't give you the cards, but I can give you my website. And if anybody wants to email me, you can get a hold of me through my website. It's erichoward.info. So it's E-R-I-K Howard.info. And, you know, if you just, you know, drop me a line on the blog or something like that, I can tell you about, I can give you a full calendar list of all the shows that are, big shows that are coming up in the Midwest. There's a really nice one, and if you want to go, like, as a couple, there's one called Scrape by the Lake, and it's not too far from Niagara Falls. And so, like, last year, we got to go stay at Niagara Falls, you know, at a hotel, and then I was able to shoot the show, but it's really nice. It's on Lake Ontario, you know, and it's 500 cars. A lot of lowriders from Montreal come, you know, and so it's kind of weird to see lowriding speaking French, you know, and then, you know, people from California come, and, you know, like, they, you know, their English isn't real good because they're speaking Spanish, and the guys from Montreal, their English isn't real good because they're speaking French, and just to see them there, like, trying to talk to each other, it's a lot less difficult than you can think because they're all talking cars, you know, so it's really fun to watch. I mean, it's amazing, and it's a good, you know, date, you know, or a weekend, like, good getaway. You know, we were trying to go for a couple of years, my wife and I. That one's the last weekend of July. It's called Scrape by the Lake. And you can look up scrapebythelake.com. If it's the weekend before the last weekend in July, you can tell Aaron that I was giving you bad information. I'm just trying to remember. Other questions? They're good hoppers, but I mean, you know, they won some and they lost some, you know, so the West Coast guys that came out, you know, they won some and they lost some. One of them didn't even hop at all, you know, but he just came to come, I guess. I don't know why he brought his car, you know, that's good. But it was good for me because I was able to take pictures of it and, you know, get to meet them and hang out. Actually in December I got to go to L.A., so the next couple months in Lowrider Magazine, there's a big article coming out on Crenshaw and the importance of Crenshaw Boulevard in the lowriding culture, which is extremely underdocumented. As I was saying, lowriding's multicultural, and often blacks' contributions in lowriding are overlooked and not really picked up by the media, and when they are, they're very negative. And so we did a history of Crenshaw. And so for, you know, for a photographer from Detroit to come out and document something in their own backyard that's not being documented, it's really important to us, and we wanted to, you know, shine a spotlight on it. And we're getting a lot of positive feedback, you know, already just about the pictures that have been taken, and people are really looking forward to that article. So if you guys see a Lowrider Magazine on the shelf, it should be in the September issue, which will come out in July. If you want, just, you know, just check for the Crenshaw article. Anyways, it's a plug. I always hear people do it on the radio. I want to do it. I have a microphone.
That was awesome. There we go. So let's give him a hand, Eric Howard. When I initially asked him to do the program again, we talked about doing the talk. He's like, well, I don't know how much I can talk about lowriders in an hour. I'm like, I don't think that's going to be a problem. So thank you so much for coming. If you could fill out some of the pink evals and let us know how great he was, we definitely, the great thing about Eric is that, you know, he does all this youth mentoring, and we also last summer did a fantastic program with a couple of the girls on quinceañeras in Latino culture. So I'm also, you know, hoping to talk to him about doing some other things. So it's great to be able to bring Detroit over to Ann Arbor as well. So thank you for coming. And we did tape this. So if you have any folks that missed it, just look for it on CTN in a couple months after we get it all produced. Thank you very much for coming.